What's up, guys? Welcome back to the Evolve Your Brand podcast. I'm your host, Dave Gold. And on today's episode, we've got Paul Spears. Paul is the founder of the new P&L, Principles of Leadership. And he works with many startups and early stage companies, as well as companies that are medium size as well and large companies on helping them to really find their values and their morals from within so that they can expand and grow from a place of purpose. Sounds like something that we talk about a lot here. So without further ado, thank you so much for jumping on the podcast. Where are you based, Paul?
Based just out of London in the UK.
Beautiful. And my first question to you is, what has been your short story of your journey to get to a point where you decided to create the new P&L?
Yeah, I mean, I've had a, thank you, by the way, for the opportunity to speak. That's really nice to be on the podcast with you first and foremost. So thank you. I mean, the journey's for me has been an interesting one. I've had sort of 30 years in brand management, reputation management, business strategy, and so on. And about 5 years ago, I was running one of my agencies at the time. I've been an entrepreneur for most of that time. And we were subject at that moment in time to a very challenging series of unethical actions from a client that pretty much took the agency to its knees and me personally as well. But being a creative at heart, in the middle of that, I just had the idea for the new P&L that there had to be a better way of doing business than just what we were subjected to at that time, an old P&L. It had to be a new P&L based on principles and leadership. Now, that idea hung around in my mind for about 5 years, and I'm always revisiting ideas that I come up with that maybe don't fit the mold right at that point, but if I feel there's something in them, then part of my process in business is to keep coming back and curating and revisiting ideas, trying to find new vehicles for them. And about 2 years ago, the idea of the new P&L and the idea of a podcast came together initially. So I launched the new P&L Principles in Leadership and Business podcast. It's grown exponentially over the last 2 years. We've listened to in over 80 countries, several thousand listeners a month. So at the beginning of last year, I launched the new P&L Brand Purpose Institute. And that is, as you say, really just working with entrepreneurs and small business owners and business leaders to redesign, redefine the principles and the purpose that underpin their business, and then critically realign them with the commercial ambitions, because I believe that every business needs a purpose, but if that purpose is not aligned with the ambition of the business, the commercial ambition, then we all know where it goes. It leans towards the commercial first. So we have to ensure there is synchronicity between that commercial ambition and the purpose of that business. And that's where I am, and that's how I end up here speaking to you today.
Can you give a more in-depth example of what you mean? So what is a commercial ambition of purpose versus a genuine or authentically aligned ambition of purpose from the founders, from the senior management, and as you've talked about, really buying in to that purpose?
Yeah, absolutely. So I refer to vinyl values. And if you think when you walk into a business and you'll see a value proposition or a slogan or whatever it happens to be behind the reception or in the boardroom or in the offices, and they'll be claiming to be everything that a business should be. It's their values, it's their principles. But actually, quite often those things, and they're printed on vinyl, hence the term vinyl values, they end up becoming a substitute for rather than a demonstration of the values and the purpose that should underpin that company. So in the absence of a genuine commitment to the purpose and the values, you just end up selling, you sell product. And that's great in the short term, but for a company to be sustained over the longer term, you have to have more than just that. That has to be the outcome of your belief in your company's purpose, your understanding of what its vision is, the buy-in by your employees and customers and other stakeholders into the essence of what you believe your company is, what its values are, and the purpose for it and the mission that it wants to deliver. The outcome is a business that has more sustainability over more time, because everything that they do in that business, whether it is understanding how the innovation process is developed, whether it is the sales teams, whether it is the marketing, whether it is the business strategy, everything feeds and folds back into what is my purpose before you develop that strategy? What is our purpose? What are we trying to achieve? Before we develop that commercial plan, what is our purpose? What are we trying to achieve? Similarly with marketing, operations, and so on. So purpose should sit at the heart of that business, and it should feed out to the commercial, the strategic, the operational arteries of any business. When it is aligned succinctly, you have the basis for more sustainable, profitable company growth.
And what do you define as purpose for those who are listening who have heard this term and they think it's a bit esoteric, and it definitely means something different to different people at different times. Mm-hmm. And it's a term that, you know, doesn't have to be just subjective to one period or time in your life. Purpose can change, and it can evolve. Absolutely. And it can develop over time and depending on who you surround yourself with. So what is purpose to you, and what kind of purpose is instilled in the new P&L?
I mean, your purpose in business is why you're doing what you're doing, you know, why you're doing what you're doing and what you're doing, what you're doing. So the purpose for us, we are trying to create a global movement in business based on more principled leadership and more purpose-led business. That is the essence of what we're trying to deliver, to elevate through the podcast and through the work we do, to get people thinking differently, leaders thinking differently about how they run their businesses, how they build more principled purpose into the essence of it, how cultures and employees become more purpose-driven, so they believe in the essence of the business. You know, when a business is established, every business starts with a purpose, or I would hope. You know, no one wakes up on a Saturday morning and thinks, I've got nothing better to do, I want to start a business. You start a business because you have that purpose from the outset. You want to deliver a new service, find a new innovation, deliver a new solution, solve a problem, whatever it happens to be.
Or quit your job and be free and you know, your own time schedule and create your own wealth.
Absolutely. But there's a purpose behind that, isn't there? You know, there's
freedom.
If you quit your job and start becoming a coach, you become a coach because you want to help others, perhaps to solidify and secure the freedom that you have. So every business starts with a purpose, but somewhere along the line, we end up with less purpose in business and more just product iteration.
Or ego.
Or ego, absolutely. And all those things are mixed in, you know. In the absence of purpose, we end up with focusing on that bottom right-hand corner of the spreadsheet, which is 5% more growth next year, 5% more growth the following year. But for what reason other than just profit? We've got to have a deeper reason. There are so many intangible costs within business that filter out as a result of not having purpose. You know, people leave because they've got nothing to believe in that business. The business sometimes lacks direction and is a bit rudderless. So that means it's not maximizing profitability because it doesn't really know where it's going. Innovations become iterations because there's no spark, no inspiration, no passion, no drive, no purpose behind the product development. So all of these things are built on purpose.
Well, it's something obviously that many people, they check off and then they overlook and they forget to come back to it and really revisit whether or not they're still in alignment with their purpose. And I know we've talked about, and I've heard you talk about, the authenticity that lies behind the brand and how there is a tendency for many business owners to be less transparent via their positioning. And it's something that I've noticed to be quite true for many reasons. So let's break it down. And let's take, for example, someone that wants to, you know, be a coach in business or in dating. And if they are making a bombastic promise like generating X amount of revenue per month or X amount of dates or the perfect girlfriend, that that shiny object can become very attractive for many people to want to reach out and learn more about what it is that that person offers, especially if there is a pain point. Now, behind that, well, this is what the client wants, and then we'll give them what they need after. There is this gap between what you tell someone that they're going to get versus what they're actually going to get once they get inside of that business or inside of that program or that service. And many times the clientele in today's age feel very disenchanted or let down. They feel like they were led astray. And so how do you work with your clients on bridging that gap and making sure that they create attractive, irresistible offers without making promises that they can't keep?
It goes right back, I think, to the very first sentence that you delivered in that question, and that was people revisiting or ticking it. If you are going back to revisit your purpose every now and again, then we're coming at it from completely the wrong approach, because you don't revisit purpose every 6 months or 12 months and think, am I living by it? Purpose is a living, breathing organism that should be fed and weaved into the business every day. So it should underpin your communications. It should underpin the way your culture is. It should underpin the way you go out to the market and the marketing you do and the promises you make, to go back to your point just now. So if you want authenticity in that approach and you want customers to have a more authentic experience in line with your promise to them, then you've got to go back to your purpose. What are you trying to deliver here? Because I don't think some companies, I'm sure some companies are, but most companies aren't being malicious in that approach. Most just drift so far from their purpose, and marketing managers or marketing directors or someone else in the organization comes up with this proposition, this promise, whatever it happens to be, in the absence of being able to turn back and understand what the clear vision and purpose is.
Or maybe they're feeling pressure to produce some sort of ROI. And you talked about the ROI of purpose, right? So how do you make it in a company so that you're not putting too much pressure on the employees or the brand managers or the COO, so that the purpose ends up getting watered down or lost along the way?
Well, it comes back to setting expectation from the outset, isn't it? You know, and if we come back to purpose again from and some of the workshops I deliver, I talk about the difference between a one-dimensional legend and a purposeful legacy. And a one-dimensional legend business is only focused on growth for growth's sake. Grow, 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 grow. And it might go from, you tell us chronological growth story on that one-dimensional legend, and it might be single story to global empire. You know, look what we were, look what we did, look what we've become. But the sole focus is creating a legend in business. Look at us, we're a legend. And I'll come on to another point about the great resignation in relation to legend at the moment. But creating a legend is a vacuous approach, because it's only solely focused on growth. So if you don't have growth in that business, what have you got to turn back to? What have you got to turn back to reevaluate where that business needs to go to make courageous decisions to change the business? Where do you go in a time of crisis to turn back to? You don't have purpose, you only have a legend. If you create a purposeful legacy, then you start from the point of serving, not taking. A one-dimensional legend takes, a purposeful legacy serves. And the minute you start from the point of serving, then it is about working as a customer-first, customer-centric organization, trying to understand what the customer needs rather than what you're trying to force on them in return for taking the profit from them. Now, a purposeful legacy can also grow from a single store to a global empire. I mean, Patagonia is a great example of that. REI, Goodloop, there are Gravity Payments. There are many, many examples of great purposeful businesses. But the nuance is where you place the effort, and the effort is on service, not taking from. And when you build a one-dimensional legend, then it's usually led by one or a few, and it has a supporting cast of tens or hundreds of thousands. And what happens is, and it's evidenced by the Great Resignation, to come back to that point, is over the last 2 years, loads and loads, millions of employees across the world have had the time and have woken up and realized that actually they're not part of a purposeful legacy. They don't know what their business's purpose is. They don't feel a collective and individual contribution and responsibility to it. All they are doing is building someone else's legend. And they've woken up to that over the last 2 years and thought, actually, that's not enough. It's not enough for me to just build someone else's legend. I want more purpose in my role. I want more responsibility and contribution and a collective belief in something. And that in the last 2 years has demonstrated the fundamental difference between a one-dimensional legend and a purposeful legacy. A one-dimensional legend, as I say, is built by a few, with everyone else contributing in a transactional way to building it. A purposeful legacy is everyone collectively, purposefully, and willfully and passionately building towards a legacy that you're going to leave for yourself and for that business.
Really well put, especially with tying it into the mass exodus in the job market these days. And with people leaving their workplace, many of them are venturing into the world of online entrepreneurship and looking to start their own business venture. And although in the beginning of that journey, it can be incredibly exciting and there are many visions and dreams that may come up, at a certain point, I think there is a level of frustration that becomes too much for many to handle, and they decide to quit and go back to getting a job, okay, or start working in another company or working with someone else or working in a different way than what they foresaw that they were going to create, or yeah, the legacy that they were going to fulfill. And one of the reasons why I think many online entrepreneurs get to this point of frustration, or I don't want to call it failure, but they get to a place where they need to pivot, is due to something that you talk a lot about in your work, and also in mine, which is originality and creativity. And creativity and creative thinking being at the heart of that business, rather than just being a copycat business of another energy coach, business coach, brand consultant, designer, editor, you know, finding what about you really stands out to make yourself and your offer and your business and your community and your network irreplaceable. And with such a vast amount of businesses and competition, if you even want to see it as competition out there, the only way that I think that you can forego the competition in a very non-aggressive approach is by creating something that is unique and finding that unique selling point that no one has been able to tackle quite like you before. It's not that other people haven't talked about similar ideas or philosophies or models or whatnot, but at the heart of your business and your model lies you. And so I'm going to tie this into something that I heard you talking about in one of your podcasts, where you said that right now, consumers have more power than they've ever had And yet brands have less power than they've ever had. But what about personal brands? When you create a personal brand based off of creativity and authenticity, do you believe that they really don't have the same power that they that the consumer does?
What I mean by that statement is that the purchasing power is far more in the consumer's hands than it's ever been before. And the ability to influence the perception of the brand is far more, because of social media in large part, is far more in the hands of consumers than ever before. So brands often have to play catch up now in that regard. They can't determine and dictate all of the messaging, all of the perceptions, all of the reputation management. In terms of a couple of the points that you've made, I'd love to go, before I address that exact point, I'd love to go right back to the beginning. And you talked about many people that are coming out into the world and taking that freedom and doing that job and finding that it's not working the way they want it, and they maybe go back into a job. And I do think a lot about this. And I think in part, it's because, you know, one of the most dangerous sayings in business is, from my perspective, is the saying that if you do what you love, you never work a day again in your life. And that is, you know, that is, it's all over the internet all of the time. And it's, in my humble view, totally wrong. You know, you do work every day. And I'm in my early 50s. I've been an entrepreneur most of my life. And I'm working harder with the new P&L than I've ever worked in any of my roles. But this is a role that I feel in a job and a passion and a mission that I feel more personally aligned with than anything I've ever done. But I've had to work harder at it than any other job I've ever done, any other entrepreneurial venture I've ever launched. So that delusion, which I think some people go into this world with, that as long as I'm doing what I'm passionate about, it's all going to come easy. Every day is a slog in the new P&L, but it is a slog that I'm passionate about, but it is not coming easy. It does not mean that the community walks through the door. It does not mean that it all falls in my lap. I'm doing 12 to 18 hour days every single day, or most days. And every win is celebrated because every win is so hard won. So I think that's one of the real, challenges, is not that the reality has ever changed, but the perception of us being able to walk out and take our freedom and have a job where we can mold our lives around it without too much effort, just because we're passionate about it, is a really dangerous delusion, I think,
personally. I'm just going to respond to that real quick, because I made a little video on my Facebook, David S. Goldstein. Guys, if you're not already friends with me, or on my business Instagram at Dave Gold Evolve, and I was talking about four pillars of success that I look for in fulfillment. Okay. Peace of mind, freedom, also being able to connect with people that you really want to connect with, and then abundance. Okay. And I asked my audience to tell me what they thought success meant to them. And one guy responded and he said, when it doesn't feel like work, but it earns you money, that's success. And although that is a great perspective, I don't know if I agree. I think that when you earn money on one level, maybe you're doing something that you love and it doesn't feel like work, but it might still feel like work, especially if you're going out and you're, you know, showing up to that photo shoot, or you're getting on Zoom and you're having that consultation call or that business meeting. That's work. And you can reframe it and see it as something different, which is a beautiful, you know, NLP or mindset tactic, but it also is work. And putting in the work to be able to earn a living and to step into abundance is necessary. Yeah, and as
it's,
you,
it's in the nuance, isn't it? It's
yeah.
You're still working. That's, to go back to the earlier point, it's the difference really between pointless work, which we often feel when we're in a job, we're employed, and purposeful work. But it's still work and it's still hard work. You might enjoy it more, you might love it more, you might believe in it, you might see the vision for the future, but it's still hard work to get there. But it's not pointless work. You're not just turning up 9 to 5 and wondering what it's all for. You know exactly what it's for, but it doesn't necessarily make the day any easier or any less. Just because you believe in your passion doesn't mean you're only doing 3 hours a day rather than 14 hours a day. Some people might be, but it's not me.
If you set up the systems and structure and you start building teams, there are ways that you can optimize your time and your output in order to still create massive input.
Of course.
But many of the business owners, even Tim Ferriss, the author of The 4-Hour Workweek, still work tremendous amount of time and effort and hour into building their business or their new ventures because it is something that they love to do and it brings them purpose and it brings them passion. And, you know, for some of us, we have this dream that if we'll have enough money from our crypto or NFT ventures or our, you know, getting bought out from our company, that we'll be able to just go and sit on the beach and chill with the pina colada and a beautiful woman and that'll be it. Yeah. And many times people that get to that place, and I haven't gotten to that place per se, I've had certain level of success in my business and in my life, but many of the people who have gotten to that place have told me that it's not so fulfilling. You know, being in the mansion in LA and you're all alone, it can be very depressing. You know, being on the jet and you've got no one next to you and you don't know what you're doing with your life can be a big wake-up call that there's more to life than just this financial success or accumulation of things.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that the paradox of that example is that if you're that driven to be that successful and those are the fruits of your success, they're not going to be the things that fulfill you, because actually there's a deeper passion, isn't there? There's an deeper entrepreneurial passion that cannot just be fulfilled by the mansion in LA, as you say, or whatever it happens to be. That's why you see so many startups that are acquired and sell out, and the CEOs or the founders might trade out over a year or two, but then they'll start something else. Now they could sit there for the rest of their lives, as you say, with the pina colada, but they start something new because the financial reward is the outcome. It's the thrill of the entrepreneurial chase that actually sits right deep in their subconscious and their minds and drives their emotional desire to build something better, to be something better, to transform something in their lives. The financial rewards are wonderful, but it's not the only thing that drives people. If you're able to get to that level of success, there is a much, much deeper, for most of us, a much, much deeper passion and drive and emotional trigger than just, I'm going to be a millionaire one day. That's just should be the icing on the cake for those who fulfill their passion after a lot of hard work.
Now, Paul, we're going to wrap up soon. And what I'd like to know is, what type of people do you really like to connect with in your network? And what type of people do you like to work with?
So connect within my network, anyone, because I think everyone has a conversation to be had. And I love just talking and learning and meeting new people. So I think in my network, I'm open to having a conversation with anyone. In terms of who I like to work with, we are finding quite a sweet spot in terms of the resonance of our purpose proposition with startups that are maybe getting to 30, 40, 50 people. They may be 2 or 3 years in, high growth businesses. And those founders are finding that the business is getting to a level where maybe they're hiring outside their wider network. Maybe they're growing so quickly that the culture isn't able to keep up with the speed of the growth of the business, both operationally and from an employment perspective. And they're just losing their way a little bit in culture and the purpose and trying to figure out what purpose means at the next stage of the business. Because when you start with a small team and you're all in it together and you're you're pushing that purpose forward as it turns into a, matures into a, let's say a business of the comparative of teenage years. You know, you're still trying to grow, you're still excited, but you're a little bit disorientated, you're still trying to find your feet. That's where I think this business fits very well with those businesses, because we can reorientate, redirect the purpose in that business to underpin the next point of growth as they mature into the adult part of being a business, if you like. So I think that's those are the businesses we will work with: small, medium-sized startups, corporates, whatever it happens to be, delivering our workshops or our programs. But certainly in some of the conversations I've had recently, that seems to be a place that is particularly resonating for those we're working with, those who are getting to that second stage of high growth and just need to reevaluate their purpose and align with it.
You know, I love what you said about connecting with everyone, because on one hand, you know, our time as entrepreneurs is very valuable and we need to be selective about how we use it, and, you know, asking the right questions to qualify people as to whether or not they're going to be someone that we can connect with on a networking basis, mm-hmm. or a potential client basis is very important. But when we neglect the opportunity to connect with someone just as a person, sometimes we miss the true beauty in that. And mm-hmm. I see where many guys go wrong in jumping on the call with the generic, well, why did you book this call with me today? Or, you know, what are you looking to get out of this? Or is it all right if I sell you right now? Rather than just really trying to get to know the other person for who they are sitting in front of them. And from that place, the conversation starts to develop. It starts to open up. You're not coming from a place of a salesy, sleazy persona. You're coming from a place of authentic, vulnerable, I want to get to know you and see how I can serve and help you. With that being said, let me dive into our final question. This interview is not prepared, as you guys know. I really just like to flow, take some ideas from things that I've heard from the guests and see how it all comes together. And I think this conversation has come together quite well, and it's been a pleasure having you on. And there was something that you talked about, because innovation is so important. You said humans want innovation as long as it doesn't disrupt familiarity to the innovation. So I'm wondering if you can finish this off with how innovation is valued in the new P&L, and what innovative ideas or processes you are going to be implementing in 2022 and beyond.
I want to take a step back from innovation and talk about curiosity, because it's a real focus for us. You can't have innovation without curiosity, because curiosity is the food for creativity, and creativity and creative thinking is the food for innovation. So we can't evolve as a society, as a business or an industry, if we don't remain curious. And I have a theory that, and one of the keynote presentations I give actually, is my concern around whether we're outsourcing our curiosity to an algorithm. And what I mean by that is, when we, as you know, when we search online and we're fed more of what we've, on the basis of what we searched on, more of what we liked and we've read, I worry that in some respects, we are funneling the depth and the breadth of the curiosity that we need to fund our innovation in our minds over time. And if you think about when you, I don't know, you go for a walk through London and you are hit constantly with all of the visual, the audio, the every type of emotional, tangible and intangible stimuli. You look up on the boards at Piccadilly Circus and you see ads, you see something in the Metro newspaper as you walk past, you hear people's conversations, you see something in a shop window. And some of these things are recognized and they're conscious, they're taken in consciously. And other things are subconscious, they recognize, they register in the back of your mind. But all of those things, conscious and subconscious, are put in those filing cabinets in your mind, waiting to come together randomly at a new point in your life when an idea or an opportunity or a solution or a problem presents itself. And all those things fly around in the back of your brain and your neural channels and join together and present a unique solution to that problem. But in order to have that the essence of what we need to solve those problems, we have to expand our curiosity, not narrow it. And I worry that if we create a funnel for us through echo chambers, through algorithmic searches that feed us more of the same, then we don't really expand our remit, our core, the core of what we've got there to be creative and to solve those problems. And a chap I interviewed last year on the New P&L podcast, David Sable, who used to be global head of Young & Rubicam, one of the world's largest advertising agencies. And he said, when you used to read a newspaper, you would, and this isn't an argument around analog or online, that's not the debate, it's about the expansion of curiosity. And he made a really good point. He said, you would pick up a newspaper and you would read it, and you'd maybe there's five or six different stories on the front page, second page, third page, and so on. And you'd read some in full, some in part, you'd see some headlines, you'd see some images, but all of those things were diverse. And then you get to page seven and you're reading a full article on page seven, for argument's sake. And you are contextualizing that document or that word, that article you're reading with all of the things that you've taken in the previous six pages, all of those seemingly unrelated things. But that's how you contextualize and come up with new ideas from the article you're reading at that point. So my, I guess in summary, my point is we need to expand purposefully and intentionally our remit of our curiosity and get out and explore in the world. You know, another theory I have is the minute we put a phone on a camera, our camera on a phone, and we turn to a selfie, we put ourselves at the center of the world rather than looking out upon the world as you do with a traditional camera. And I think that changes the way we think inside our minds, the way we think about our role in the world, but also how curious we are, because we're looking at our hair and mouth and lips and whatever it happens to be, rather than what's behind us or what's out there if we're looking out into the world. And so because we've got such wonderful access to all of this information on the internet, but we do also have algorithmic searching narrowing our focus, we need to be very, very, very intentional as individuals about where we seek our curiosity and how we build our curiosity and how we curate those ideas when we do. Because the beautiful thing about a telephone or a mobile phone, unlike the telephone, is we carry around the best curation machine we've ever had in the history of humankind to capture that idea in that moment. To, if you come up with an idea in your mind, to record it. If you see something, to take a photograph of it. If you think something, to type a note out. You know, I mean, as I said, I'm in my early 50s, and when I had to do that in the 80s and the 90s, you'd have to carry a journal or carry a camera or try to remember it for when you got home or write it down or whatever. We've got all of the technology to capture so much rich basis for curiosity now. We have to utilize that. We have to take it to almost to supplement the narrowing of the curiosity that was sometimes fed online. Because if we can't do that, then we can't be creative. If we can't be creative, then we can't be innovative. So in terms of the second part of your question, I mean, I won't go into specifics about what we're launching for this year because I don't want to spoil it at this point, but I have a book of curated ideas, as I said, where the new P&L came from. And that book's hundreds and hundreds of pages long. And most of the ideas are probably crap, you know, they're probably rubbish. But like the new P&L, there'll be one or two ideas in there that are good. And they're only good because you revisit them with fresh eyes and fresh perspectives and fresh context and fresh opportunity, 6, 9, 12, in the case of the new P&L, 5 years down the track from the idea to the delivery of the new P&L as a concept. So no idea is wrong. They're just maybe not right for right now. So that the one piece of advice I would give more than anything else is capture that curiosity, those ideas in the moment, because they are all beautiful ideas. However ugly they may appear in that moment, they are the shape, the beginning of shaping something, and curate them and revisit them and revisit them and revisit them, because you change every day. And so your perception of what that idea will be and how it will impact on something will change every day. Anyway, I feel like I've gone off on a bit of a rant towards the end of it, but that would be my answer to the question.
Well, that was a beautiful rant and way to end off our lovely discussion today.
Thank
and
you.
If anyone really resonated with you and your message, how can they reach out to you?
Well, you can find me principlesandleadership.com and get in touch with me via there, or paul@principlesandleadership.com. Find me Paul Spires, S-P-I-E-R-S, on LinkedIn, or the Principles and Leadership company page on LinkedIn as well. We're on Twitter and Instagram too, but just drop me an email. I'm very happy to have a conversation or connect with me on LinkedIn. I want to expand continually my curiosity, so I'd love to have a conversation.
Beautiful. It's been lovely connecting with you, Paul. We connected on LinkedIn and now on this podcast. Guys, if you enjoyed what you heard today, the only cost of the podcast is to drop a like, a comment, and to share it with someone that would gain value. And if you want to learn more about what Paul or myself does, feel free to reach out. It's been a pleasure. Talk soon.
Thanks, David. Thank you very much.
Very welcome. Yeah.